DW Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Wednesday, the 28th of November. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are glad to have your company on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We would like to have your thoughts and feedback on the stories we are covering. So please be sure to leave us your comments.
That's right, indeed, Zipporah. Coming up, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari rallies his troops after extremist attacks. An analyst tells us why he thinks Nigeria should not be left alone to tackle the problem of Boko Haram.
Nigeria has been bankrolling the operations of the multinational joint task force with minimal support from international partners. The participation of countries like Chad and Niger is no longer as active as it was at the beginning of the Buhari administration.
Plus, new investigation points at attempts to cover up the killers of two UN peacekeepers in the Democratic Republic of Congo a year ago.
The UN investigators themselves discovered evidence that some agents or former agents, army, may have been involved in this killing.
Also on the show, Madagascar's two former ex-presidents to face each other in a runoff next month to decide who will lead the Indian Ocean island nation.
These stories plus much more to come, but first here's a chance to listen to World News in Brief.
DW News.
I'm Eunice Onjiro with DW News. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday accused Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko of orchestrating a naval provocation in the Black Sea at the weekend in order to boost his flagging popularity ratings before an election next year. Russia seized three Ukrainian naval vessels and their crew on Sunday over what it said was their illegal entry into Russian waters. Ukraine denies this. President Putin gave this version of events.
It turns out that among the crew members, two of them were security service members. They confessed that they were members of the security services of Ukraine. This points to it being an act of premeditated provocation. It was intended to use this provocation as a pretext to impose martial law in the country.
At least 29 people were wounded on Wednesday when a woman bomber blew herself up in the border town of Amchide in Cameroon's far north, a region frequently hit by Boko Haram jihadists, security sources said. According to the sources, a second bomber was shot dead by troops deployed in the town before she could detonate her explosives. A local civil defense group official said the attack occurred on market day when the town was filling up with early morning shoppers. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A joint investigation by several international media outlets, including the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung, has revealed that the United Nations concealed evidence suggesting that Congolese authorities may have been involved in the murder of two UN peacekeepers. Swedish citizen Zaida Catalan and American Michael Sharp were killed in March last year while investigating an armed conflict in Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai region between government forces and the local Kamuin Nsapu militia. Tobias Zick of the Süddeutsche Zeitung was part of the investigating team.
We have found out that some of the people who were there as translators, and one of them also accompanied the two experts during their field trip the next day, had at least in the past worked as agents for the ANR, so the Congolese Security Services, or the army. This shows that these two UN experts were actually lured into a lethal trap.
And finally, Brazil announced on Wednesday it is withdrawing its offer to host the COP25 UN climate conference next year, citing financial constraints. The news comes just days before the start of COP24, this year's annual climate conference being held in Katowice, Poland. President-elect Jair Bolsonaro, who will assume office on January 1st, has threatened to withdraw Brazil from the Paris Climate Accord while also vowing to remove restrictions on the agribusiness sector, accused of causing untold devastation to the environment, in particular the Amazon rainforest. For more news and information, visit our webpage, that's dw.com, or download the DW app. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And you are listening to Africa Link. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. And first, let me acknowledge some of you listening to us on our Facebook page. And Kamu Sinkiru, they are writing from Nigeria. And Lucas Peter saying, watching you live from Ghana. Please leave us your feedback and thoughts.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has today urged the military to rise up to the challenge in the wake of growing Boko Haram incidents in the past days. Buhari was speaking today when he visited some of the injured troops receiving treatment in Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State.
His government and the military have come in for a huge amount of criticism since the attack that led to the killing of 40 soldiers. My colleague Christina Kripal talked to a Nigerian political analyst, Kabiru Adamu, who believes the country needs more support from the international community to fight the rising Islamist insurgency.
Nigeria has been bankrolling the operations of the multinational joint task force with minimal support from international partners. The participation of countries like Chad and Niger is no longer as active as it was at the beginning of the Buhari administration. The fact is that in August this year, Niger and Chad actually pulled out of Nigeria. They had troops in northern Borno and they pulled out. So it appears that the corridor around Chad and Niger is now open. ISWAP is mainly able to come in, carry out its attacks, and then retreat and hide in a stronghold around the Lake Chad basin area. And then the other possible reason is the inability of the Nigerian government to win the hearts and minds of villagers that are in that location. So the ability to generate intelligence that will help in the warfare is missing.
There's also a rumor going around that the attacks might be financed by the political opposition in Abuja ahead of the elections.
It's very difficult to pinpoint or have any evidence to indicate that the political opposition financing or bankrolling the attacks. However, what is clear, the political opposition is taking advantage of the attacks and they're using it for political gain. We've seen statements by the flag bearer of the People's Democratic Party in the person of the former vice president, Atiku Abubakar. The spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party has made statements regarding that. But what is very clear is that neither the All Progressive Congress or the All People's Democratic Party has come out with tangible and verifiable statements to confirm to Nigerians that they have a better strategy to deal with the current counterterrorism challenge that the country has.
Kabiru Adamu, a political analyst from Nigeria. And of course, many of you have been giving us your thoughts on that and feedback. Usman bin Damaturu says, I pray that this visit, that refers to President Muhammadu Buhari, will lead to a lasting solution to the Boko Haram insurgency in my region.
And Lamin Fofana in Montreal, Quebec, Canada says, Nigerians fighting Nigerians, absolute nonsense in the 21st century.
Blossom One Song says, not too long ago, Cameroon and Nigeria went on a victory lap, with Cameroon telling everyone willing to listen how they had defeated and destroyed Boko Haram. And he's asking, what was that all about?
Many thanks for those comments. Now, a journalistic investigation has unearthed how Congolese forces may have been involved in the killings of two UN peacekeepers, Swedish Zeida Catalan and an American, Michael Sharp. The two were brutally murdered in a remote village in the Congolese province of Kasai in March last year.
A UN panel that examined the murders concluded last year that Sharp and Catalan most likely were driven into an ambush ordered by a local tribal chief. But a joint investigation by journalists has said that Congolese authorities actually carried out the murders. I talked to one of the journalists who was behind this investigation, Tobias Zick.
During our joint investigation, we have found out that the UN investigators themselves discovered evidence that some agents or former agents of Congolese security services and army may have been involved in this killing. The UN Board of Inquiry, which was established to investigate on this murder, chose not to publish all the information that it had. And this is a point which we found quite interesting and worth investigating and reporting on.
Tobias, maybe you could tell us, apart from the fact that maybe they do want to flare things up, do you think there's another reason why the UN would cover up such important evidence?
Yeah, and at this point, we have to be careful with any speculation. But what we know is that the head of this board of inquiry, Mr. Greg Starr, deliberately chose not to blame the Congolese government in order to have them still work together with them and cooperate.
And of course, there are many who will point and ask, how did you come up with that conclusion?
We have analyzed hundreds of documents that an anonymous source had come up with and handed over to us. So the analysis of the internal UN documents was a very important part of the investigation. Also, we have a recording of the last meeting that Zaida Catalán and Michael Sharp had in the city of Kananga the day before they departed to their field trip, during which they were finally murdered.
That is Tobias Tsik, a journalist at Suit Deutsche Zeitung, who was behind that investigation.
And of course, as usual, we have the pleasure to read some of your comments on the story. Ako Amadi says, I don't put it beyond the UN to do that.
And one WhatsApp user is saying, trust UN at your own risk.
And Bosman Collins Ashu says, the UN is the number one corrupt organization in the world. Anyway, keep the debate flowing as usual on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, Madagascar's Constitutional Court has confirmed that former presidents Marc Ravalomanana and Andrea Jolina will face each other in a runoff next month to decide who will lead the Indian Ocean Island nation. Neither of the two candidates secured 50% of votes required to secure an outright victory.
Current President Henry Rajao is out of the race after garnering about 8% of the vote. The Constitutional Court rejected his request to have the election cancelled, saying there was insufficient evidence of widespread irregularities. Sela Oneko has more.
The two candidates eligible for the second round of the 2018 presidential election are Mr. Andre Nurina Rajoelina and Mr. Ravalomanana Marc.
The announcement by the president of the High Constitutional Court is what many supporters of the two main candidates had been waiting for. According to the court, Marc Ravalomanana got 35.5% of the vote in the first round of elections earlier this month, while Rajoelina garnered 39.2%. It is the first time that the bitter rivals will be facing each other in a runoff election. Ravalomanana ruled the country for 7 years, from 2002, until he was ousted in a military-backed coup that installed his rival Rajoelina. Shortly after the court session on Wednesday, Rajoelina vowed to appeal to undecided voters before the runoff. For the two candidates, there's a lot at stake. They were both banned from running in the last election in 2013 to avoid a repeat of deadly political violence. Many people in Madagascar are hoping whoever takes over will turn around the country's economy. Although the country is well known for its vanilla and precious rosewood, according to World Bank data, almost 4 in 5 Malagasies live in poverty.
Sela Oneko with that report.
Now back to our main story of Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari rallying his troops against extremist attacks. An analyst was telling us why he thinks Nigeria should not be left alone to tackle the problem. And we have some comments, and this time from Cameroon. Mekemi Blaise says, I'm not sure of this because according to Paul Biya, that's the president, he deleted Boko Haram about 2 years ago. Interesting comment there, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, they're also reacting to the fact that there was a suicide bomb attack today, and they have many reactions. Justin Buril says, President Biya, he wakes up today and declares on Boko Haram, wakes up tomorrow and says he has defeated Boko Haram.
I like the debate, Zippy. Olani Edipo says, of course, the terrorist group operates both in Nigeria and Cameroon, and so both countries and Chad should rally together and fight them.
And Leonga Mogreen says, Biya said his army has defeated Boko Haram in his swearing-in ceremony this month. How come we are getting this disturbing and worrying news?
Well, the debate is flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And of course, whenever we can, we shall be reading your comments on this topic. Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. And just to acknowledge some of you listening to us, there Ngozi Obi writing there about what we were just talking about, Boko Haram. And then there's Stephen Odims talking about DW. So, of course, thank you very much for your comments.
And coming up in the next 15 minutes, reactions from Rwanda after authorities cracked down on skin bleaching products.
I think the government has better things to focus on other than bleaching, seriously, because bleaching is a personal decision. It's me who knows if I want to be brown or keep my dark skin.
So, Isaac, she said it's a personal decision to bleach okay. or not to bleach.
That is the question, Zippy, to bleach or not to bleach. There are so many comments coming in on this topic. We shall come back to them after the report itself. Now, a day after President Paul Kagame took to Twitter to weigh in on skin bleaching products, authorities in Rwanda have launched a joint effort to confiscate the creams, some which are smuggled into the country illegally, pulled off shelves within this week. Zippy.
Yeah, of course. The operation, which came as a surprise to many, has left locals with divided opinion on the matter. From Kigali, our correspondent Nasra Bishumba filed this report.
This week, Rwandans have been thrown into yet another unexpected debate of whether to bleach or not to bleach. The debate started after President Paul Kagame wrote on his Twitter handle, and I quote, "quite unhealthy among other things, includes use of prohibited chemicals. Ministry of Health and Rwanda National Police need to rein in this very quickly," end of quote. And indeed, the police and health officials swung into action. While some agree with President Paul Kagame that the practice has long-term health-related consequences, others feel that the choice to bleach one's skin is an individual decision. Nicole Ange Wase told me why she thinks that the government should be pursuing bigger issues than skin bleaching creams.
I think the government has better things to focus on other than bleaching, seriously, because bleaching is a personal decision. It's me who knows if I want to be brown or keep my dark skin. I think if you really want to protect the citizens, you can probably start with something as big as the cigarettes, because cigarettes kill, but bleaching, I don't think it's that necessary.
For quite some time now, skin bleaching products have been doing fairly well on the Rwandan market, just like in many parts of Africa, because many women think they enhance their beauty in the eyes of possible suitors. This is why Brian Niwenshuti is worried that the president's involvement in the issue could affect both traders and users of the cosmetics.
Of course, society frowns upon people who are not comfortable in their own skin, but bleaching is not a crime. The most that government can do, in my opinion, is to protect the market against substandard cosmetics, but I'm worried that a sudden directive by the president that is impulsive, as we've seen before, often results in two overzealous actions by authorities.
Despite a cross-section of Rwandans concurring that the government has better things to do than care about people's skins, Brice Sirgwa, a pharmacist, supports the government decision to take most of the bleaching creams off the shelves.
I fully support the idea, especially because most of the people using these bleaching creams are the youth who are unaware of the side effects. The first effect is that bleaching weakens the skin, making it easier for one to get cancer. And then it is difficult to restore the skin back to its original complexion. And besides, I don't even think that it is possible.
John Bosco Kabera, the spokesman of the National Police, told me that the crackdown was long overdue and in accordance with the law. He also dispelled the myth that it was an infringement on the rights of ordinary Rwandans.
Police is law enforcement agency, and the law has been broken. Ministerial instructions, number 20 of 2016, terminating the list of cosmetics whose use is prohibited in Rwanda. The list is very long, and it's about 1,343 cosmetics that are prohibited for use in Rwanda. The operation will be combined with a campaign across the country for people to understand the dangers associated with the use of these cosmetics.
According to the World Health Organization, at least 4 out of 10 women in Africa practice skin bleaching.
Nasra Bishumba reporting from Kigali. So, Zippy, let's start the debate.
I know you like this debate about to bleach or not to bleach.
Exactly. And we have so many comments. Let me start with this live comment from Chibuike Charles Obona. He says, What is government business with people bleaching or not bleaching? If someone chooses to bleach her skin, it's a business. People should have the freedom to choose what they want for themselves, including who governs them.
Wow. That's
you heard
a good
also
one.
The lady, the story was saying, seriously, the government has other business to do. And the male was saying, no, they should control the products, but they should let the ladies be yellow or whatever they want.
But Isaac, we know the problem is that most of these products are not quality and they are linked even to skin cancer and other diseases. I think that's the main question.
Yeah, exactly. And we have also a comment on that note from Finian who says, yes, no one thinks about skin cancer.
And of course, our Epi Efikan says, thank you, Mr. President. I have never seen a white man trying to be black by color.
Steve says, I like this president. He's just doing it great.
And he's got lots of support here. Abkone says, I am definitely with him to take strong action against those disgracing our people by bleaching their skin.
Now, someone who calls Mbapo Zonepo a live commentator says, excellent initiative. I wish he was my president.
Wow. Lots of support there from the men, especially.
Yeah, exactly. Men are saying, no, want our ladies. Or whether they bleach or not. Okay, anyway, keep the debate flowing as usual on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
On the spot.
Well, away from bleaching, countries in the East African region have launched a single passport in a bid to ease travelling, business and communication, among others.
The single passport is already being used to new applicants, while those holding old national passports have up to 2021 to replace them. From Kampala, Alex Gita reports.
This is Entebbe Airport, Uganda's only airport. It is the main entry and exit that the country boasts of. However, many travelers within the region have been using the airport to traverse the region using fake passports. But now authorities think that with the new East African Community Passport, they will have lesser cases to deal with, as explained by the government spokesperson Ofono Opondo.
While the passport will read East Africa International Passport, it will indicate the country of the holder. This passport will have an electronic chip inserted in it, more difficult to alter, more difficult to forge, and more difficult for any other person to use your passport.
But what do travelers think about the new initiative to phase out the old passports and introduce one that is recognized not only within the region, but even beyond?
Enhanced security features, the ease at which you can track whether the document someone is carrying is genuine or not, is a big achievement. We've had so many cases of our passport being forged by foreigners and so on. For me, as a Ugandan, I am more concerned about the security and the protection of our national document.
Yeah, safety is key, but what else do you think should change with this new passport for the East Africans?
First of all, Uganda's passport has been one of the widely accepted. It's not doing bad. When you carry it, you can go to many countries, either without a visa, or you find the visa at the point of entry. So it is fairly strong. However, I hope an East African passport will even increase that.
This is the final announcement. Emirates Flight 873 to Dubai.
The new East African passport will also be electronic and different from the current one, as explained by the spokesperson of the Ministry of Internal Affairs, Jacob Siminyu.
That chip holds massive data about the person who is the holder. And when you go into processing of the traveler, it means that the biometrics of the traveler are embedded in the passport, meaning that someone cannot claim to be the owner of that passport, also meaning that it is very secure. If you attempt to use it when you are not the owner, you will certainly be arrested.
That report was by Alex Gita, reporting from Entebbe International Airport in Uganda. And a big shout out to Hamza Day London, who says he's listening to us from Guinea Conakry. And so is Lucas Peter, who says he's listening live from Ghana. Yes, stay around. We still have much more for you to come.
Living Planet Africa.
Yes, Living Planet Africa. Nairobi is unique in the sense that it's the only capital city in the world which has a national park full of wildlife within its city borders.
Unsurprisingly, the occasional lion or leopard sometimes makes its way into residential areas, often unfortunately with fatal consequences for the animals, thanks to the foolishness of their human neighbors. This report by Linda Staude is now presented by Eunice Wanjiro.
Two rangers fire repeatedly at a lion. Within a few seconds, the animal collapses, dead. It has at least 6 bullets in its body. In the background, at least 20 men scream and shout. They live directly next to Nairobi National Park, from which the lion had wandered into the city. They were trying to scare him out of the neighborhood and, ultimately, are the ones to blame for his death, says a spokesman from the Kenya Wildlife Service.
Noise that were made by people, it aroused the anger of the lion and it injured one person. Now, as a result of that, our personnel who were on the ground reacted to it, and to stop further injuries, they were able to pull it down.
The lion, who was named Mohawk, was one of the most famous lions in Nairobi National Park. It's been about 2 years since his death, which sparked a wave of anger across Nairobi, even among some of the people in the crowd who sparked the chaotic scenes.
I feel bad because the Kenyan Wildlife Service did not just stun the animal and take it back to the park. Instead, they killed the lion.
It remains unclear to this day why the rangers weren't carrying any stun guns, which would have probably saved Mohawk's life. But the scandal has drawn attention away from the root cause of the ongoing conflict between humans and wildlife in Nairobi, the rapidly growing human population. As people encroach on the habitat of wild animals, the consequences can often be fatal for the big cats who accidentally venture into nearby residential areas, explains Paul Gathitu from the Kenya Wildlife Service.
One lady had actually left word by milk and she comes back and finds this leopard in the sitting room. And then people now start coming and they've never seen a leopard in their life. And so many people had gathered, you know, 200. So we knew that the next thing that would happen, somebody would be injured. So we were forced to bring down the leopard.
Nairobi is unique in the sense that it's the only major city in the world which directly borders a national park full of wildlife. Many densely populated residential areas are located right next door, and construction sites for new highways and a modern train line now wind their way through the park, which can cause even further problems for the animals, explains the head of the Kenya Wildlife Service, Kitili Mbathi.
As they're constructing at night, sometimes they hit the fence and break the current in the electric wire. The lions periodically test the fence to see if there's a charge in it. And when there's no charge, sometimes they will jump over.
Wildlife in Kenya is actually protected by very strict laws. They are typically left alone unless human lives are deemed to be in danger.
That report was written by Linda Staude and presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
And we had a report on our page from the Women Leaders Global Forum that is taking place this year in Iceland. DW met Ghana's Minister for Public Procurement, the 37-year-old Sarah Adoa Safo, who said, "My father was the first feminist I know." A good quote there.
Yeah, for sure. And many people have written and have been giving us their thoughts on that. Hussein Adams from Accra says, "Is she helping in molding young women who, because the economic situations, are finding life very difficult in Ghana?"
And Primus Trump, that's his name, he says, "The one and only woman who goes against all the odds. Kudos, Sarah Safo."
And someone says, a WhatsApp user says, "That's a great father who has helped to make her child what she is today. Congratulations to your dad for empowering such a positive impact in you."
And the final comment is from Frank Amof Asante, says, "That's my hardworking member of parliament." Many thanks for your comments and for giving us company. And on behalf of the production crew, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made.
for mind.